Friends, Baruchim Habaim, welcome all of you. It's a great pleasure to see you here again. First of all, I want to thank Avital Magalis for arranging this here. And I also want to thank Yad HaRav Nissim for allowing us, for giving us the opportunity to make use of this Beit Midrash. Special Baruch Haba, first of all, to my dear friend, Professor Bill Kohlbrenner, William Kohlbrenner, the other rabbi, or better, the other professor is just walking in, Professor Elliot Malamed, and also good friend, Baruch Haba to you. Hi. Tonight we are celebrating a book by Professor Kohlbrenner, which you see over here. The Last Rabbi. It's quite a title. Professor Kohlbrenner is a professor of English at Bar Ilan University, an expert in Milton, and he has lately written a lot of very important stuff on the Jewish tradition, and this book is one of them. A remarkable book, as you will find out. Professor Elliot Malamed, sitting next to him, is a lecturer of Jewish studies and English literature. I'm not sure if you are still at the University of Toronto. You still
no,
are?
No,
in Bar Ilan University.
Hebrew.
Yeah. Also written a lot on the Jewish tradition in very unconventional ways. I just want to remind you of two things. I put on your chair this prayer. Please take it home. Make use of it. I wrote this prayer because I believe it is high time that we should say something for the non-Jewish world besides for ourselves. And if you are able to be meshachnea, as they say in Hebrew, to get your rabbi or the kabbaim to say it, perhaps after the Mishaberach or for the chayalim in the shuls, please do so. I have a hard time to sell this to them, but perhaps you do better than I do. Interestingly, the Reform community took it straight away in saying it. The conservative community is saying it. Churches wrote me that they are saying it. And the Orthodox are not saying it. Friends, about 35 years ago, a very famous professor who is no longer alive, a fantastic personality by the name of Professor Emil Fackenheim. I'm sure you've heard all about him. The professor who was known for his many writings about the Holocaust and an Haeckel expert, and also specifically about the Jewish tradition. He just had, at that time, published a book which you may know. It's a great book to read, which is called To Mend the World, Foundations of Future Jewish Thought. And the conference took place at the Hebrew University, and I was there myself. There were about 1,000 people sitting in the room. And the person who was to critique this book by Emil Fackenheim was nobody less but the famous Yeshayahu Leibowitz, the l'enfant terrible of the religious Israeli world, an ilui in every sense of the word. So Leibowitz got up. I saw this myself, I was there. And he said, Professor Fackenheim was sitting next to him, and he said, Professor Fackenheim, I must tell you something. I did not read your book. And we were all taken, obviously, totally back, and we couldn't believe our ears. And then he said, you probably wonder why I did not read your book when I'm here to critique it. Typically Leibowitz. And he said the following words. The first thing what I do when I get a book to read, I read the footnotes. If I like the footnotes, I read the book. If I don't like the footnotes, I don't read the book. Professor Fackenheim, I did not like your footnotes. And I tell you why. and he was right about that, Leibowitz. He said, because all your footnotes indicate that Hume did not make use of the original rabbinical sources. You took from Martin Buber, you took from Franz Rosenzweig, when you quote a Rashi, it comes from Franz Rosenzweig, Martin Buber, about Midrashim and things like this. This is not for me. I did therefore not read the book. And he sat down. And I shall not tell you what happened afterwards.
You're not going to do that now.
Wait a moment. Wait a moment. What do you think I'm introducing you? So, Professor Kolbrenner, I only read your footnotes. But the reason is different from in the case of Leibowitz. As you know, my wife has not been well, has been in hospital, and I was not able to read the book properly. But I liked the footnotes. I believe, actually, when reading a little bit here and there through the book, this is a most remarkable book, and I'm not saying this because the professor is sitting next to me, but because it is something of a totally different quality than anything I've read about Rav Soloveitchik. And I think by now too many books have been published about Rabbi Soloveitchik. This is an exceptional case. Worthwhile. Not an easy reading. I will leave the praise and the critique to Elliot and the two professors together to discuss this book and to explain you what this book is all about. But before I do that, I want to take about 20 minutes to tell you what I think of Rabbi Soloveitchik. And that is this. I never met Rabbi Soloveitchik, to my great, great regret. I didn't learn in Yeshiva University. I went to Haredi Yeshivot in England, basically, and later here in the Mirror Yeshiva here in Meir Shearim. But I think that I read all his books. First of all his books on Jewish philosophy. And I even read some of his halachic works, the Lomdus, as they say, the Lamdanut, of his Gemara Shiurim, which were all very fascinating, no doubt. That he was a Gadol Hador, there's no doubt about it. He was an exceptional great man, towering figure, with an output of writing which is unbelievable. How the man had the time to do so, besides all his learning, is indeed incredibly impressive. But, and I hope you hear well what I say, he was not a Mechadesh. And I tell you what I mean by that. He was not a Mechadesh, meaning to say, to think in novel terms, when it came to huge halachic problems. There he was a traditionalist, like all the Ossopolskim. And perhaps even more than some of the Ossopolskim. And I'll tell you in a moment why I say this. And he did not move the halachic tradition forward in a way which I had hoped he would do. And that's very strange, and I'll tell you why. Because if anybody wrote about the halacha, it was Rabbi Soloveitchik. Truth about it is, if you look into the Jewry of America in these days before Rabbi Soloveitchik came on the scenery, nobody wrote a word about halacha. I'm speaking here about the Orthodox community. They were writing about Jewish philosophy, about the Nevi'im, about prophecy. They were writing about universalism, all the beautiful things about the Jewish tradition, but nobody touched in philosophical terms the concept of halacha. And there was a very good reason for that. And that is that really the Orthodox community was embarrassed about halacha. Why was it embarrassed about the halacha? Because they did not know how to explain this strange phenomenon called halacha, which makes problems out of every little issue. I once said to my student, the halacha is the art of making a problem out of every solution. And I think that's true. But who was going to explain that, why that is? And Rabbi Soloveitchik took on that task. And he did a marvelous job. First of all, I come to that in a moment, in his halachic man, Ish HaHalacha. But for the rest, there was complete silence in this field. And Rabbi Soloveitchik broke through, and he single-handed, I would say, created a discussion about the world of halacha like nobody else had done. And today, because of him, there's no doubt about that, we don't only have Orthodox halakha, we have conservative halakha, we have reform halakha, we have reconstructionist halakha. Suddenly it became a major issue. But he was the man who put the halakha on the table. And that's remarkable, and I'll tell you why. Because it is nearly contradictory. While he wrote so much beautiful things about the halakha in philosophical and ideological terms, when it came to the application of halakha, he did not move anything. He was the ultimate conservative halachic authority, especially within the modern Orthodox world. So he was not a machadesh in that sense of the word. He was what in the yeshiva world we call a masbir. He was an ultimate great exponent of what this Judaism was all about. The beauty by which he writes, the English in which he writes, which was not even his original home language, is outstanding. It is dazzling in every sense of the word. And what he did, and only he could do that basically, was he used philosophical ideas coming from the non-Jewish world, psychology, philosophy, literature, whatever he could get his hands on, and he moved that into his understanding of what this halakha was all about. And by did he that a phenomenal job. The only other person I can think about who also did something like that, but in very different terminologies and in a very different way, was Abraham Joshua Heschel. Also a very famous Jewish philosopher, but of a totally different background, Hasidic background, and as you know, Rav Soloveitchik came from a real Lithuanian Litvish background. Personally, but that is a personal observation, Heschel speaks more to me than Rabbi Soloveitchik, but that's a different story, which perhaps in also time I will speak about. For the rest, Rav Soloveitchik, from all the writings, and I've also been speaking with Rabbi Norman Lam about this, and also people, he was an old-fashioned Rosh Yeshiva, running basically Yeshiva University. He was a brisker, as we call him. And if I think and I read his Chidushim in Gemara and so on, that was nothing different from what I heard from my Rosh Yeshivot in Gateshead Yeshiva, Haredi Yeshiva at the time, two tremendous great Reb Leib Gurwitz and Reb Leib Lapjen at the time, from whom I have semicha. They wrote exactly in the same tradition as Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik was there not at all something special. To tell you honestly, the truth is, I sometimes heard Chidushim of Rav Soloveitchik, but they were always said in the name of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, because since Rav Soloveitchik himself was a Zionist, he was not mentioned in Gateshead Yeshiva. More interesting was that he did not see himself at all as a posek. If you would ask him, what are you? He would say, I'm a Malamed. I'm a Malamed. I'm basically a teacher. That's what he saw himself. The only difference I would say is that Rav Soloveitchik definitely saw there were moral problems within the halacha. He realized there were issues there which really needed to be tackled. Women's issues, the mamzer problem, the aguna problem, problems which at the moment we are speaking a lot about within this community over here. But he did not solve these problems. He did not do anything about it. He left it for what it was. He was very conventional. In fact, I know this from first hand, he was more conventional about some of these issues than Reb Moshe Feinstein. David Hartman, the famous, unusual David Hartman, in a book of his called The God Who Hates Lies, you mentioned it as well, writes over there that there was a case of a Gioret convert who wanted to marry a Kohen, a priest. And you know that the halacha is that a Kohen can't marry a Gioret. And Rav Soloveitchik, when he got this couple in front of him, sent them home and said, I can't do anything for you. I know personally from the Talmidim of Reb Moshe Feinstein, and actually twice I used it and gave a chuppa because of that, Reb Moshe Feinstein was of the opinion that you could marry these people most of the time when there was in the family a break as far as Shemirat HaMitzvot was concerned. If an older generation stopped to be Shomer Mitzvot, he would say then you can't rely anymore on the Kohanut of these people, and he would permit them to get married. Twice I have made use of that heter after I discussed this with some great poskim. And the case of Rav Soloveitchik, which is mentioned by David Hartman, was a similar case, also where there was a break in the tradition. And interestingly enough, and I have no answer, I'm actually standing with my back against the wall, Rav Soloveitchik was not prepared to give a chuppah, and Kiddushin did not allow it to happen. To me, this is a pella, as they say in Hebrew. This is astonishing, because he did not see himself as a posek, and he lived in the same days as Reb Moshe Feinstein, and he must have known about this. Big puzzle. There is another man with whom he had a major difference of opinion. That was the famous Rav Emanuel Rachman, the head of Bar Ilan University, who I personally knew as well. Very interesting man, very innovative. And one of the many differences of opinion which he had with Rabbi Soloveitchik was about indeed the case of the status of women within Jewish halacha. In short, I won't go into the details over here. There is a concept within the Gemara which we call taf lemetaf, which means to say this: it is better to live, speaking about women, it is better to live as two together than to live alone. Meaning to say that a woman, in according to the Gemara, would always prefer to be married, even when it is the wrong person, even when she doesn't like him. As long as she is married, she will prefer that over being alone. And Rav Soloveitchik understood that to be a chazaka, that is to say, an absolute fact which cannot be challenged at all. And Rav Rachman was of the opinion, which I personally agree with, that this was purely an historical fact, which at the time of the Gemara was indeed the case. But today, if you would ask women, are you prepared to live with somebody you don't like? The Gemara gives many different unpleasant examples of that. Would you be prepared to do that? And a woman would say, definitely no, I better be single and be alone. And Rav Rachman therefore had a major difference of opinion with Rav Soloveitchik about that. And as Hartman writes, David Hartman writes, what Rav Soloveitchik did was, he made it, and I quote here David Hartman, it into a permanent ontological principle. That is to say, there is no such thing as a woman not wanting to be married, even when it is to the wrong person. This has all sort of effects in halacha, which I won't go into now. And Rav Rachman said, I absolutely disagree. And then, very interesting, in an article of Rav Rachman, he tells that a story that he met about this matter with Rav Soloveitchik. And Rav Soloveitchik said the following words to him, I quote, Rachman, speaking to the younger Rachman, you may be right and I may be wrong. You view the halakha historically, and I like to view it meta-historically. Two different opinions about this particular matter. In other words, Rav Soloveitchik made into some kind of an ideal and above the presumption of fact. Even when the facts are different from what the halakha says, he was of the opinion that the chazaka should continue to be applied today like it did a few thousand years ago. Very strange, to be quite honest. And with all respect to Rav Soloveitchik, I do not understand it, especially because Rav Soloveitchik did not see himself as a posek. So why was he, especially when he already said that Rabbi Rachman was probably right, not prepared to go along with that? And then, being Rav Soloveitchik, he could have done wonders for women, and he didn't. Compare Rav Soloveitchik with somebody else who I tremendously admire, I never met, that was Eliezer Berkowitz. the famous Rabbi Berkowitz, who lived the last few years here in this city. He was a Talmud Mufak of the three-day age, the famous Rav Yechiel Weinberg, who in my days in Europe was considered to be the Posseik, the Halachic Authority. Rav Berkowitz maintains, very interesting, that since the establishment of the State of Israel, the Halacha has to undergo, Orthodox Halacha, has to undergo tremendous changes because the Halacha had been developed in the last 2,000 years within exile and was responding to exile conditions. And he said, and I quote here what he said, Halacha became defensive. It had to build huge walls around it to hold ourselves away from the non-Jews, an anti-Semitic world, making sure that we hold together, we will not assimilate. And says Rav Berkowitz, but that time is over with the establishment of Medinat Yisrael. We are now an independent people and we should take these walls down. And he wrote a fantastic book about that. It is in Hebrew, but it was also translated in short in English, which is called Ha-Halacha Kocha V'Tafkida. The Halacha, its strengths and its purpose. I think in English it is called Not From Heaven. A very worthwhile reading. And he's making there the point that the Halacha has been for the last 2,000 years in a waiting mode. Basically waiting to get out of its own exile condition and becoming itself again, liberate itself from all the problems which it had to build because of the exile situation. But, says Berkowitz, this time is over. He dealt with Shemitah. By the way, believed that we should do away with Shemitah nearly altogether and not doing all these strange things which we are now doing by selling land and things like that, which is halachically highly problematic. The whole story is highly problematic. He had the most unusual ideas about Giur, how we deal today with a few hundred thousand people walking around here in the State of Israel, and how can we megayah them even when they won't keep all the mitzvot. He wrote about the status of women. He wrote about the Agunot, and some of the Gedolei Hador at the time were prepared to go along, how to free these particular women. He wrote about the Mamzer. He wrote about many very, very interesting things, and he made a major breakthrough. But he was unknown within the Orthodox world. Tremendous Talmid Chacham, by the way. There was another person, another few people I need to mention, and that is a whole story on its own. If you look into the Sephardi halachic world, you will find there people who are in the Ashkenazi world completely unknown, who were tremendous great halachic personalities and did more or less the same what Rav Berkowitz did. That was first of all the famous Chacham ben Tzion Uziel, the chief rabbi of Israel in the days of Rav Kook. It was afterwards Rav Yosef Mashash, who was the chief rabbi of Haifa, unbelievable halachic authority, who had the most daring ways how to deal with halacha. And there was one Ashkenazi, which is completely unknown, definitely in the yeshiva world. I never heard about him. I just read all his teshuvot. They were just republished. And that was Reb Chaim Hirschenson. Very remarkable man, not only in halacha, but also in Jewish philosophy. Clearly, first-class Talmid Chacham, who tried to respond to the issues of today, specifically in the State of Israel. All these people are more or less unknown, besides Rav Soloveitchik. The only other person I could mention, as you know, is obviously Rav Kook, who was very much known. And while Rav Kook had a philosophy, a complicated philosophy about halacha, and definitely wanted to move in different directions, when it came to Psak Din, he stayed the old-fashioned posseik. The same thing. I discussed that with several of his Talmidim, and they all said that it was a strange thing. There was really two different Rav Kooks. There was the philosopher, Rav Kook, and on the other side, there was the pure halachist called Rav Kook. When this book of Rav Soloveitchik was published, the Halachic Man, which I think was originally first written in German and then translated into English many years later. They brought this book to Abraham Joshua Heschel, who was at that time a professor of Jewish philosophy and of mysticism at the Jewish Theological Seminar, himself a tremendous Talmid Chacham, and he lived more or less an Orthodox life. And they had asked him about this. What do you think about this book, The Halachic Man of Rav Soloveitchik? Here is what Heschel said. That is the way how people wrote it down. If that's completely correct, I don't know, but it's interesting. They wrote in the name of Professor Heschel, I should say Rabbi Heschel, the following words. Ish ha-halacha, the halachic man, lo haya velo nifra ela mashal haya. There was never such a Jew called an halachic man. Soloveitchik's study, so brilliant, is based on the false notion that the Jewish tradition is a cold, logical affair with no room for piety. These are quite strong words here. After all, the Torah does say, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and might. No, said Heschel, there was never such a typology in the Jewish tradition as the halachic man. There was and is an Ish Torah, not an Ish Halacha. A man of Torah who combines halacha and akadah is very strong with Heschel, but that is an also matter altogether. That was the critique of Heschel, and very interesting, the former chief rabbi of England, Jonathan Sachs, in a hespet which he gave on Rav Soloveitchik, writes that when Rav Soloveitchik saw the book of Heschel called the Shabbat, which by the way you must read, it's a beautiful work, and there he said, halacha is not poetry. Heschel had turned the whole of Shabbat into an incredible poetry, unbelievable, what and the way how he wrote that. But for me, the halacha is first of all the lametet melachot, the 39 forms of work which are not permitted to be done on Shabbat. So here you have two totally different kivunim about the same topic, Shabbat, halacha, and so on. And we can only say, elu elu divrei Elokim chayim. Both tremendously great people. The earlier mentioned poskim, which I just mentioned, life like Rav Hirschenson and the Sephardi poskim and Eliezer Berkowitz, they sought out of the box when it came to practical halacha. There is little of that to be found within the writings, the practical halacha, in the writings of Rav Soloveitchik. I don't know, it seems that he did not realize what Rav Berkowitz had said, and that is that it has become defensive and that it was waiting to be liberated. That never came up. But can you just imagine, if he would have accepted that point of view, what Rav Soloveitchik, in his incredible brilliance, greatness, would have been able to do practically for the halakha when it came to women and to many other matters. Truth is, in my opinion, I don't know if the professors will agree with me, for what I read is that once Rav Soloveitchik wrote all these beautiful, fantastic, great things about the halacha, he also withdrew behind the halacha, the conventional halacha, and left it for what it was. He did not go the way of Berkowitz, Rav Uziel, and all the other people. And I think that because of that, modern orthodoxy got into problems. My personal opinion, modern orthodoxy is outdated. And I say this with great pain, because I would have liked to say something different. But I think it has something to do with the fact that it ultimately was not prepared to solve some of the major halachic problems and fell back on the old traditional points of view without taking into account what Berkowitz, Chacham Uziel, and others had been writing. There was no breakthrough with Rav Soloveitchik, and there is nearly no breakthrough within the Orthodox, modern Orthodox community. There are exceptions, no doubt, especially here in Israel, but in America it is a little different. One last word, which may be harsh to say, but I say it with great respect. I think there is an unhealthy obsession with Rav Soloveitchik within the modern Orthodox community. touches on, forgive me, Avodazara. The man became an idol. It nearly became a cult. I've been several times in Yeshiva University, I've even taught there. Rav Soloveitchik was seen like nearly like an idol. He was the last word about everything and anything. I can tell you, when I learned in Gates at Yeshiva, Big Rosh Yeshivot, there was no such thing. We had tremendous respect for our Rosh Yeshivot, but we would disagree with them. There was no such thing as people saying Das Teure, as they call it today, that everything suddenly becomes a halachic matter which people just can decide. Didn't exist in my days. We went for an Eitze, we went for a request, an advice from our Rosh Yeshivot, but it was not taken to the point that we made idols out of him. My impression when I read, when I speak with people in that community, that this was going a little too far in the case of Rav Soloveitchik, which I'm sure was the last thing he wanted himself. And he himself was living in tension. He was a split personality. On one side, he was the man of the old-fashioned brisker method of learning Gemara, and he did that phenomenally well. And at the same time, he was taken by modern conditions, the modern world, philosophy, especially German philosophy, and he tried to bring them together, and I think he got stuck in the middle of all of it and did not know what to do, and therefore indeed became a person who I think was pained by the fact that he could not overcome this incredible, difficult situation. He tried, but I don't think he actually succeeded. Flexibility on one side, fundamentalism on the other side, were built in his personality. If you have seen the movie about his life, you see it clearly there coming up as well. But the greatest thing about him is no doubt that he laid the foundations of the theology of Halacha, no doubt. He did tremendous great for modern orthodoxy. But I think we should have to temper a little bit his authority in this respect and allow other people to speak, such as Rav Berkowitz, such as Rav Weinberg, such as Rav Chacham Ben Zion Uziel, Rav Yosef Mashas, and even the more radical Emmanuel Ruckman. They got less attention, and I'll tell you one thing why that is as well, in my humble opinion. They were not called Soloveitchik. The Soloveitchik name was already so much established since Reb Chaim Soloveitchik and his father, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, that by having that name alone, it gave him an authority which the authors who were not called by that name just did not ever have. And that's a great, great pity. And we must make sure that indeed, because of that very reason, we give the authors a chance as much as we give a chance to Rav Soloveitchik. Once more, I've said this in great respect of him. I am an ultimate great admirer of him. But at the same time, we need to think this all a little bit more over in ways that we see more balance in what is happening today within the modern Orthodox community. I thank you very much. The Chabot.
We're going to take a 3-minute break. I'd like everybody at the back to find a seat. If there's any seats here, please tell people.
There are two here.
And there's four seating over here. Please come up. And of course, over there.